And we are back. Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Birth of a New Earth. My name is Janice Barcello. I am here with Vinny Eastwood. And I have a question for you, Vinny, because I've been so tuned in to what's going on at Fukushima. Isn't New Zealand pretty close to Japan?
Not pretty close at all. No. I mean, it's about as far away, I guess, as the United States is from it.
So
maybe even further.
You don't have any concerns? Because when I look on a map, it looks to me like Australia's pretty close to New Zealand, Papua New Guinea, close to Japan. I don't know exactly where New Zealand is, so that's why I was asking. Do you worry about that at all, where you are, or no?
Look at it this way. How can you worry about something that you cannot escape and is already surrounding you, contaminating everything you will ever touch, ever breathe, ever eat?
I know I'm worried about it, because I'll tell you, I was...
You're in the Northern Hemisphere, love. Don't worry about me.
Yeah.
Worry about yourself.
Yeah.
Because that's where all the airborne stuff is going. We're just getting the residual effect from the oceans. But they were dumping contaminated water into the sea since day one of Fukushima. And when I first saw the reports of the radiation spikes that were coming off of San Francisco and the California coastline, the amount of birth terminations and so on and so forth that happened on immediately after Fukushima, the reports coming out of the planes coming from Japan setting off radiation alarms, air crews getting sick, this kind of thing. You see the satellite images of the trade winds blowing all those plutonium particles and things of that nature all around the Northern Hemisphere. And it just occurs to me the Northern Hemisphere is wiped out. Okay, like if you want to survive for any particular decent period of time without subjecting yourself to the many different diseases associated with radiation sickness, you don't want to be in the Northern Hemisphere, frankly.
I agree. I mean, I'm giving serious thought to actually moving to the Southern Hemisphere for that very reason. I was in Hawaii when Fukushima happened. And 9 months later, I was diagnosed with a pretty serious thyroid condition. So I know that my health has been affected. It was affected. I was only there for 2 months, you know, and then I left and came to New York. But in that 2 months' time, I was obviously saturated with radiation. And it's affected my health. So I know also, like, the seals in Alaska were washing up with radiation poisoning. The birth defect rate in the state of Washington, which is on the West Coast, has gone up 800%. The United States government has raised the acceptable levels of radiation in our food by 400%. So they're allowing us to eat contaminated food. They're allowing contaminated food to be sold and are even importing beef from Japan. So there's some real attempt, I think, to kill us, for lack of a better way to say it, to genetically mutate us.
David Icke says, if you want to avoid disasters like what happened at Fukushima, just don't buy your security cameras from Israeli nuclear weapons manufacturers. did you hear about that?
Tell me about the connection there. No, I don't know about that.
Well, I think a while before the Fukushima blast happened, they ordered in these new cameras. Now, you know how big a camera normally is, even the big CCTV cameras, you know, like this big or whatever, you know, they're not that big. And so they're getting these ones that are like a couple of, like nearly a metric ton. A couple of them. And then during the Fukushima thing, we see these big mushroom cloud type booms coming off of this thing. The place was blown up big time. They were so stupid that they stored spent plutonium fuel rods. Plutonium, by the way, named after Pluto, the Greek god of the underworld. Well, sorry, Roman god of the underworld.
Yeah.
Because it's that frickin' deadly. Microgram can kill practically anything. It's ridiculously explosive. So they store about 40 years of these spent fuel rods on top of the reactors. So when they blew up into the air with nuclear force, there ain't nothing in this world that isn't going to be affected by it.
It's overwhelming to me, you know, and I don't know what it's going to take for us to be able to neutralize. I do believe we can neutralize it with consciousness, but that we're so genetically altered that we don't have our resources about us or our potential, you know, in full operation that would allow us to successfully neutralize it. So it's been really, really up in my mind about what's happening at Fukushima, and more information keeps coming out about what's still going on there, you know. So I just thought I'd ask you, but I guess if you're in the Southern Hemisphere, you guys don't worry about it too much.
No, I'm plenty worried about it. I haven't had kids yet, and it's, you know, I kind of makes me remember my physical education teacher when I was in Waiheke High School, and she didn't have any kids. She just had a couple of corgis like the Queen does, because her husband went to Vietnam and got sprayed with Agent Orange, and they said they didn't want to risk having a horrifically deformed child, you know. I don't know why that comes to mind when I think about Fukushima and the amount of radiation that's been smeared all over my testicle. But
uranium is radioactive, you know. That's also causing deformities. And Agent Orange has got to be connected to all of this, too, because Monsanto is, you know, the maker of so much good stuff.
Okay, well, let me just lay down a scenario. This is the world, okay.
Yeah.
I had a comment made the other day about ignorance and how they like to put their ignorance on display for people, because that way people in our community will actually send you videos, links, articles, etc., for which you can relieve yourself of your ignorance through a little bit of further study. And that's why he likes to chat with people like me and on my Facebook, right? And I said to him, well, you can still retain your ignorance whilst being mostly correct, by making two very simple assumptions. If it comes from an official official source, whatever it's saying that it's there to do, whatever it's saying that its intentions are, they are most likely the direct opposite.
That's right. They're lying.
Right. So that's assumption number one.
Uh-huh.
Assumption number two. Assume that anything you cannot make at home by yourself is a soft-kill bioweapon.
Soft kill, maybe. Direct kill, you know, when you look at radiation or vaccines, too. I mean, babies are dying in droves from the vaccines. These are biological weapons, without a doubt. And
okay, so in a world surrounded by liars that ply you with biological weapons constantly, what options have you got left? You think that not waking up, not resisting, not fighting back, not speaking up, is somehow going to improve your quality of life or sustain it for longer? You have got to get a grip.
You know, part of the programming also is a death wish. You know, it's like slow suicide that most people are participating.
Slowicide.
Huh?
Slowicide.
Slowicide, that's a good way to say it.
The slower side of suicide.
Yeah.
Which goes well with the lighter side of genocide.
But that's part of the mind control programming. And frankly, you know, we can't blame people for wanting to check out of this reality. But the thing is, and I'm almost convinced of this, that death does not guarantee an escape from the satanic matrix. In fact, if you do not consciously die, let's say you end up in a hospital and you die there, the chances of your soul being harnessed and you getting recycled into the satanic matrix is quite high, because hospitals are part of the satanic matrix. They are part of the infestation. And I had somebody on my show, Dr. Byrne, I don't know if you heard it, Vinny, but he was talking about organ donation and how every time they harvest people's organs, that person has to be alive. They do not harvest organs from cadavers.
I know that from personal experience, because I once donated an organ to the local church.
I'm talking about bodily organs.
Of course you are.
Okay. And what they do is they paralyze people while they're getting ready to cleave their chest in two. There's no anesthesia. But the people are being murdered as they're being cleaved and their hearts being retrieved. And they're experiencing very high levels of cortisol and stress naturally, because they're feeling the evil that's being perpetrated against them in on top of the pain.
Are you talking about specifically when somebody's in the hospital and they're bleeding internally and they're going to die anyway, and
no.
they have a yes donor card?
I'm not talking about them going to die anyway. I'm talking about a system that makes up diagnosis like brain death.
No, but you said that they didn't have any anesthetic when they're taking their organs and stuff.
I'm telling you that they don't give anesthesia even to infants when they're going to cut off their body parts.
Oh, yeah.
They're deliberately torturing people.
Oh, they love it. I mean, that's what we're... You know the word bedlam? You ever heard the word bedlam?
I know the word bedlam. I hope you're getting what I'm saying here.
Yeah, well,
they're harnessing souls.
Yeah.
They're standing at the gates as babies are entering this dimension and torturing them. And they're standing at the gates as people are leaving. They're actually committing murder in hospitals and harvesting organs. And probably those organs are being consumed in satanic rituals. So we had better get hip to what's going on.
Well, I noticed that you can't stop talking about it. Almost every comment since you arrived on the radio show has been trying to back reference into the satanic agenda, and I believe it does bear looking upon, because if Satanism truly exists, like real Satanism, the scary stuff that you all read about in the storybooks and what have you, if that's real, then that means true kind of warriors for God exist too, combat them. The universe wouldn't just spit out some kind of unstoppable force without an immovable object as well, would it?
Well, that's a really good point, Vinny.
And that's what people have got to get really, really wise to. Not only that there's some bad scumbaggery, evil kind of, like, had you spent a week speaking with people that have been part of satanic ritual sacrifice, who had been part of satanic ritual sexual abuse, that had been part of satanic torture and forced drugging, had you thought for any more than a second collectively about what kind of damage has been done to the human race from cradle to grave, you would break down in tears and you say, please God, let it not be true. But it is true.
True.
And the onus, now that you know that information, I've just obligated you by telling you the truth. If you don't take up the mantle and fight against this form of eclectic scumbaggery, as I have, then you are abdicating your personal responsibility to the safety of the human race. God help you.
Entire and all of life, not just the human race. This, you know, these people are very pleased when they can destroy what the Creator created. That includes humans, but is not limited to humans. It expands to all of life.
Mm.
And I was posted an article on my blog yesterday about the connections between Sandy Hook and the Church of Satan. Do you know the Sandy Hook event that took place here in the United States?
Did you know that there was a movie made in 2001 called The Sandy Hook Lingerie Massacre?
Yes, I have it on my blog. I actually posted about that. Because they're always telling us, you know, even in the Batman movie, okay, they pointed on a map to Sandy Hook.
Mm.
Did you see that?
I watched that Batman movie last night, but it wasn't a terribly high-quality version, so I couldn't see quite Sandy Hook on the map there. But that was the third one. And if you're going to watch Batman, watch the second in the Christopher Nolan Dark Knight trilogy called The Dark Knight, the one with the Joker in it. And there are a lot of messages in there for truthers, I think. That movie really, really spoke to me. Because the Dark Knight is a symbol. He's not a man, he's a symbol. And what does this symbol mean? This symbol means you can live outside what society deems as normal. This symbol means that you can operate outside the controls of the current system so that you can inflict justice upon the wicked to protect the innocent while maintaining your anonymity so that the people you love don't get retribution by the people you hate. That's what the Dark Knight actually truly stands for. And a lot of people, I'm not sure if they really get this whole idea of the Caped Crusader. Because also that anonymity, that lack of responsibility in the public face, grants you to do certain things. Use deception, fear. It allows you to make a choice that nobody else can make, even though people will hate you for it, so long as you believe that they actually really need it, you know? And it reminds me of many times that I've been out in protests and talked about the New World Order through the megaphone, and had people come up to me and tell me to stop talking about that.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, don't say that.
Even if half the crowd hates me and starts to think that I'm crazy, even if 90% of them, even if 100% of the crowd was just booing me or whatever, I'd still be speaking the truth, regardless of whether or not they wanted to hear it. Because unfortunately, people think that they can live a rich, full, and comfortable life by avoiding all forms of suffering, mental, spiritual, and physical. And they avoid getting themselves into situations that make them uncomfortable. Those are the situations where we should actually be deliberately putting ourselves in from time to time to ensure that we don't grow weak, to ensure that we don't stop growing as people. If you've had the same belief for more than 10 to 20 years or so on and so forth, and you ain't making any progress in your life as a result of that belief, it's time to change your belief structure.
Yeah, there's something.
It's time to change it up.
Cognitive dissonance too, you know, when people have been watching TV all the time, you know, they're kind of glued, reading newspapers, glued into this false reality, you know, and then you come along and say, look, it's a satanic infested reality, or it's a Masonic reality, whatever, however we want to describe it, that doesn't gel in the minds of people who have not been able to break free of the mind control, you know? It's like they can't process that.
Look, it's because people are afraid to admit when they're wrong, okay? There's only three words you need in order to advance yourself and become a better human being and actually throw off all the chains of feeling ashamed that you've learned something for a change. These three words are, I was wrong. If you can't admit to yourself that you hadn't had it all figured out all along,
Yeah. Then
you certainly ain't going to figure out any more until you do. And that's what people are stuck on. They're trying to make sense of the world, and unfortunately, they find out that the world is a hell of a lot more complex than they ever thought possible. And so instead of thinking to themselves, okay, well, it's going to take a long time to figure this all out, but I'm going to try, I'm going to absorb some new information every single day by listening to the Vinnie Eastwood show or whoever, or Jeanette, the lovely Jeanette. And unless you're really willing to do that and actually put in the real work. I mean, look, how long have you been in high school? How long have you been in school? How long have you been in university? How long have you been employed by an establishment type company? Okay? Every single year that you've been indoctrinated, you've got to spend almost an equal amount of time de-indoctrinating yourself. If you can be programmed, then it stands to reason you can be deprogrammed. And the problem is, it takes other people to program you, and it often takes yourself to deprogram yourself. Yeah. That's the personal responsibility angle of it. You can't. What I really get frustrated with, Janice, is when people try to say, "I'm going to try and wake people up." What are you going to do, bro? Chuck a bucket of water on them and hope that gets them out of bed? It's not going to work, mate. Okay.
Well, that's what you're doing too with your megaphone, right? You're trying to shake things up, to snap people out of their trance because they're in hypnosis. You know, they're under a spell, quite literally.
Yeah.
That's why we post on Facebook, right? That's why we have these radio shows. That's why we're doing what we're doing, is to help people snap out of it.
I don't know.
That's why I do. Well,
maybe that's you, but that's not my objective. My objective isn't to wake people up. It's my belief that I can't actually wake people up. It takes about 7 people to say something to you before you wake up to something. Okay? I'm not trying to wake people up. I'm just trying to play my part so that 6 other people can play their parts, and eventually, maybe, this one person who I told this one thing this one time will some point down the road wake up all on their own. Nobody forced me with a gun to my head to watch 160 documentaries in a couple of months, right? Nobody forced me to do that. I make myself do that because I had the passion, I had the thirst for the truth.
Fire, yeah.
Once you get a taste for the truth, it's like a drug, you know, you get addicted to it. You stay up late nights doing it with friends, you know, this kind of thing. It destroys your family, the truth does. The truth can cost you your job, you know. The same kind of reactions that you would get from somebody who's a Class A dope fiend is the precise kind of results you will get in your life if you start getting addicted to the truth and will not stand for lies anymore. Lies are like sobriety, and the truth is the intoxicant.
Did you lose a mainstream job or anything like that?
I quit mine. This magazine, Uncensored magazine, was edited by a guy named Jonathan Eisen. He wrote a great article for Rolling Stone about cannabis needing to be legalized, one of their most popular articles ever, as well as producing 2 really great stories about cannabis curing cancer and some other things for 60 Minutes, which are also, incidentally, their highest rated shows. And he's a friend of mine now, and he's living in New Zealand. He's been fired from every establishment job in the media you could ever imagine. Because he pointed out that the CIA was behind a lot of publishing of books back in the 70s when he was working for a local paper. And I come into work this one day, and I've had a bit of a psychopathic boss, you know.
Oh, really?
Kind of guy who'll call you up at 9 o'clock at night on a Friday while you're at your mate's place having a drink on the couch, calls you up, tells you, get up, get off the couch, find a pen, find a piece of paper, and write down the number of a client to call on Monday. Not an isolated instance either.
Wow.
You know? And it just really, that was the most traumatic working experience of my life, working for that scumbag.
How long did you work for him? We're not to curse on this station, by the way.
Yeah.
You gotta be careful with language.
Why, what did I say?
I don't know if scumbag is considered a curse or not. Maybe.
Scumbag?
Yeah.
If there's a pond, you've heard of pond scum, right?
Yes, indeed.
And you have a handbag, right?
Yeah.
Okay, a scumbag is when you have that scum from the pond in your handbag, and that's what I mean. Just a little description there, okay? A little image. A bag full of scum is what a scumbag is. And I like to use the term scumbaggery. which is okay, the actions, so motive, support, hence.
My producer says it's not considered a curse word, so we're good.
Yeah,
because we get emails about cursing, you know? So we're not
Oh, yeah, of course you get emailed from cursing, because you're on Freedom Slips Radio, where the truth slips from the lips.
It does. I think there's a little bit more flexibility on Channel B, but we got to be careful. But I'm glad to know scumbag's not considered a curse word, so we can say it.
Yeah. And it's much better if it's done in kind of like a Brooklyn accent, like little scumbags.
Sorry to get distracted. What were you saying? I'm sorry.
I have no idea. You're taking me completely off base, you know? You know, these are the kind of things. I'm on a roll here, yo. I was on a roll. You twisted my roll like a tootsie roll, like a turkey twizzler.
God, I'm sorry, brother.
Well, let's talk about scumbaggery for a moment here. Because when I get elected as king of the world, there will only be two acts that I will pass into legislation. Of course, under urgency by veto and executive order, you know, just to maintain consistency and everybody will be comfortable with the way the state of things normally are. Those two pieces of legislation will be the Scumbaggery Suppression Act, which will be an act to suppress all scumbaggery in society so that anybody who's elected in any official position will get exposed and their scumbaggery laid out and aired out, and they will be tried by a jury of their peers, and they will be accepted a reasonable punishment, as well as prohibition on them ever getting a job where they have any position of trust ever again. That would be the suppression of scumbaggery. But somebody actually had to be a proven, possessed, full-on psycho with no conscience, no morals. Oh, yeah. We don't want no scumbaggery. It's not good. And the other piece of legislation would be the Suppression of All Legislation Act. So that nobody can ever pass another stinking law again that takes away people's rights.
Yeah. Wow. That's pretty brilliant. And my mind immediately, when you were talking about the psychopathic mentality with, you know, there's like no return from it, my mind goes to, oh my God, what's happened to these people that has turned them into psychopaths? You know, because I imagine
it's an infection. You can, if you stand around with psychopaths, you will actually become infected, and you can and will turn into a psychopath, provided you don't get out of that situation and bring yourself back to the heart and back to the love. There's some real dangerous stuff going down here, and people believe that psychopathy is infectious, and they've proven it is. Other people say that they are mind parasites, and they actually are biological organisms, and that they can replicate themselves and attach to you and turn you over to them. You go through a withdrawal phase kind of thing, like a proto-psychopath, and you start following these psychos around everywhere they go in some form of an entourage, because the psychopaths need an entourage. They need an audience. They need to be in direct contact with people. They love being admired, so they love being on TV, but if they were completely alone and there was nothing but a camera or anything like that, no camera people, nobody else to admire them, they'd be dead in a week. They feed off of all of the energy that we give them. They love our attention. And they love to hurt as well. They love pain. They love fear. And they use it against you so that they can attach to you, take you over, and make you just like them.
See, the thing is, I've known a few psychopaths. I've even dated... I think two of the men in my life were actually psychopaths. I didn't become a psychopath, obviously. And I also tend to think that they have been exposed to so much abuse and so much deprivation of love and bonding, and also, in extreme cases, you know, trauma-based mind control and torture.
All administered by psychopaths.
How did
and that's what they do. They get sadistic. They get sadistic, they hurt you, and then when they hurt you, they make you afraid, and then you start to open up to them. If you're not afraid, if you're full of love, warmth, light, forgiveness, they can't frickin' touch you. Not your soul anyway. But they'll do things to you if you come up against them. They'll do things to you to try and change that. There's a lot of psychic attack, apparently, along people who recognize what it is that they're dealing with. These kind of very inhuman people who, in fact, I was just interviewing a guy today on the show. There was this young boy who became pen pals with a number of different psychopathic serial killers. And one of them started to psychically attack him at night in his dreams, hurting him, strangling him, trying to rape him in his dreams.
Yeah.
You know?
That's scary.
There's something really big going on here. It's part physical, it's part dimensional, and it's part consciousness. It's a full spectrum dominance attack. All the television that we're watching, all the pornography, all it is doing is creating a low vibrational bubble here, and we're all living inside this bubble that is devoid of nutrients, is devoid of souls, devoid of anything good. So that people stop resisting the bad things, because it's all they've ever known.
That's right. It becomes normalized. Evil.
And there's nothing worse than that. What I really get frustrated with is people who use the term "necessary evil." Oh, you know, we've got to do this to the people. You know, it's for their own good. It's a necessary evil. I got news for you, buddy boy.
Two evils.
I got news for you, buddy boy. Evil isn't necessary.
No, it's not. And it's not, you know, it's not at all beneficial. And I just want to tell a brief story about what's going on in my world. There's some guy in this that's been hanging around, sitting in front of my house with a car, sitting across the street, sitting around on another block with a camera in his hand. And I went up to the window. I'm like, "What are you doing? Who are you?" He says, "Oh, I'm working for the police. I'm a detective." Do you know that the police won't do anything about this guy? Like, it's okay for somebody to be spying on someone in this neighborhood. I don't know who this guy is watching or photographing. It's okay for him to sit around these streets in his car. He changes cars, too, by the way. This has been going on for 2 days. I've called the police a couple of times, and it's not like they're doing anything about it.
Well, of course, they wouldn't exactly arrest one of their own detectives who's doing a some kind of greasy investigation with scant evidence.
I mean,
after all, then it would throw the whole credibility of the police into disarray, as if they've got credibility to begin with.
The credibility's crap anyway, because they're letting people spy in neighborhoods that don't even have any identification. I called them several times to say, "Is this man working for you?" But they won't answer the question.
Yeah. There's never a straight answer from cops. Hey, do you know where the term cops comes from?
No.
Very first professional police force in United States history was the NYPD. And at the time, there was a lot of crime in New York, and a lot of concerned citizens started kind of turning vigilante, and they learned skills of how to keep the public in order and that kind of thing. And so the city pulled together and they created the NYPD, led by all these people who tried to get people through training programs, so they had a very professional police squadron going along. And at the time, budget restraints were pretty extreme. Of course, with any new operation, you can't really afford all the fancy things that you want. So in order to make their badges, they made it out of the cheapest available metal, roofing copper. And so people started calling them coppers, and later on, shortened to cops.
Oh, interesting. I wonder what the word police means.
I wonder what the word fascist pig means.
Well, you know, we know what the word government means, to steer the mind. Govern.
I thought it was mind control.
Govern means to steer, mente, the mind, to steer the mind. So
yeah,
there's got to be some kind of meaning behind the sigils that represent the word police.
Well, actually, in New Zealand, pure methamphetamine that you would smoke out of a glass pipe is called pee. P for pure. And in Australia, that same crystal meth type substance is called ice. And a author in New Zealand named Greg Hallett said that we should have another name for it being OL. So it becomes P, OL, ICE, police.
Wow.
Because they're responsible for shipping in the frickin' meth, which is incidentally one of the drugs that encourages alleged psychopath slash demon possession.
Alcohol definitely does too.
Yeah. You know that phrase, you know, what's gotten into you?
My God, you've changed in just the last hour. It's like you're possessed.
Yeah.
I think all of the drugs, including the pharmaceutical drugs, actually open our field to allow other entities in, you know?
You see, I'm kind of a flamboyant kind of person, so if I get possessed, I'll at least do it with pizzazz.
Yes? How will you look, Vinny, if you were possessed?
I would have very, very sunken eyes, and wide, bulging eyes, like I haven't slept in like a month. Incidentally, do you know what the best part about a meth addiction is?
You don't sleep.
Well, there's only 12 more sleeps till Christmas.
I don't get it.
That's because that's how many times they'll actually get to sleep from now until Christmas.
Yeah.
You don't get it.
As a young person, I actually experimented with a lot of amphetamines, you know. But my drug of preference at that time was definitely tranquilizers.
Mm.
They say how we're born, you know, the drugs that are used when we're born influence the kind of drugs that we choose to experiment with as adults. And even people commit suicide in ways with drugs that are similar to what was used when they were born.
Yeah. Well, again, tying back into the satanic agenda, that's what the CIA is actually there for, is to flood the streets with drugs and drug culture and meaningless sex and consumerism to control the banking system, you know, that kind of thing. A lot of people don't know that the CIA is privately owned. And these kind of things that are happening on the streets with those despondent people that are a result of the society that's being created to shut them out. All of the creative, good, loving, caring people get so little positive reinforcement for being good, for being loving, to being caring, that they don't love, they don't care, and they're no longer good. And they can't come back from it. It's an invariable remainder in the equation, isn't it? And if you retained your ability to be a good person, to feel empathy for somebody, I suggest you try and get stronger, because the more pain that you've felt in your life and can actually heal from it, the more people you can help who've had pain similar to yours get over theirs. It's an exponential scale of scumbaggery that goes down, and an exponential scale of humanity that goes right back up. The difference being, when you're coming down, you forget that you're not made of glass, that you can take a few hits and get back up, and that if you're self-reliant, despair is very rare indeed. And the darkness that surrounds you thrives on your despair. They love to see you miserable. They love to see you despondent. They love to see you call people conspiracy theorists and laugh at them when they're trying to tell you the truth that might save your very life.
That's right.
There's a very, very sad reality that we have to deal with. And I think most people are prepared. I think people are prepared.
We should be pissed off about it, that we have to deal with this. The drugs are also how they mind control us. The drugs create confusion and delusion and illusion. You know, that's part of what keeps us believing in this fake reality, as if it has any substance whatsoever. It doesn't.
Yeah. And isn't it interesting that if you're hopelessly addicted to substances, it means often that you're lacking substance as a person.
See, the thing about substances, Vinny, I really think is that people are seeking to create sensations, let's say through crack or the drug ecstasy, for example, sensations that we should be able to experience naturally. Our brain should be producing oxytocin at large rates so that we could experience well-being. That's just one example. But we can't, our brain is not functioning properly because we have been so traumatized, deliberately traumatized, from the minute that we enter this dimension and throughout our lives. Even watching TV is traumatizing because it's one abusive scene after another, one demonic entity after another, one person being murdered after another.
This is why on my show I like to make jokes, have fun with my guests and that kind of thing, because often I'm talking to people who've had some of the worst traumas that humans have really even suffered through in a better part of a century. And for them to come on and laugh and be playful and really open up and share themselves, you know, in a place where of a professional nature, you wouldn't feel comfortable sharing certain things, whereas I completely accept everybody for who they are and take what they're saying to me as their genuine truth, unless of course they're mistaken about something, in which case I'll correct them or whatever. But you know, there's no fighting, there's no yelling and screaming at each other or confrontation or BS. It's just a place where, even though you've been in the pit of hell itself, you can come out, still have a sense of humor, and still have fun with life. That's the goal here, because I think people like yourself have been really hurt and damaged, and you know it does help to just laugh about some of these horrific things, even if the joke's not funny.
Have you interviewed people that have been victims of satanic ritual abuse?
Oh, yeah. Well, in fact, in a broader sense, aren't we all victims of satanic ritual abuse?
That's true. But, so, you know, the kids that are born into those families are really...
I did actually speak with a woman not too long ago who had this very thing happened to her. She was born in India, then sold into sex slavery in the United States, and they took her kids off her, ritualistically and sexually abused her and the kids. Frequently talk with a couple of activists here in New Zealand who are exposing the child, youth, and family services, pedophile rings, and meth dealing, that kind of thing going on. So yeah, I'd say I've spoken to more than most in terms of people that have been victims to this kind of thing, because I'm the kind of person that you can really open up to, like really, really open up to, and I won't judge you for it, you know, as long as you're being honest and genuine.
Well, that's beautiful, Vinny, and it's important that you're doing this so that people understand the extent of this that's happening, you know what I'm saying? So
it's one of my drives, is to understand things, you know. I mean,
yes.
I figure the key to greatness is to try and find simple step-by-step ways of doing an impossible task. My impossible task is to understand everything that goes on Earth, inside, and with people, you know, be able to understand it. That's what my impossible dream is, so that when people come to me with any kind of problem, whether or not they're suffering trauma, whether or not they have a great difficulty finding their way in the world, what they want to do, I can look back on my own experience and the countless hundreds, maybe even a thousand plus at this particular point in time, and be able to draw on an enormous base of knowledge and testimony from all over the world in virtually all spectrums of discourse. This is what I've already done, but I don't know 100% yet whether I understand it all, and I'm still on my my way, trying to figure out how to understand people and also how to use those understandings so that I can heal those people.
Do you mind asking how old you are, Vinny?
28.
And how long have you had your show?
3 years.
Oh, right on. And before that, you were part of the mainstream, or you were...
Before that, I was a radio host, co-host for 6 months.
Oh, yeah?
Before that, I was on the street for 3 years with a camera. Girlfriend was basically paying for everything, picking up the rent, and I was doing a few dance party videos on the weekends and things like that just to make a few dollars to make ends meet. And before that, I quit my job as a salesperson, and Jonathan Eisen from Uncensored Magazine told me, when I asked him, you know, I was thinking of quitting my job, he said, just ask yourself one question, does it feel right? And I said, yes, it does feel right. quit my job, took my last paycheck of like $4,500 cash after tax, plus $11,900 worth of shopping vouchers for a local mall, which had all the electronic stores and everything in it, including a supermarket. And I lived off that for a year or so and started going out to public meetings and protests and getting everything covered. And YouTube gave me a bigger channel. I got to upload videos of unlimited length. I got to get offered, radio shows and things like that. And I get to talk to pretty much anybody I want about any topic I could ever possibly imagine. And be right in the center of it all with the best people alive today.
And how do you sustain yourself? Do you sustain yourself solely through donations?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I've had some difficulty with advertising and business stuff. This is not my area of expertise. My area of expertise is going out and making sure that things get covered. So if anybody wants to ensure that keeps happening...
Yeah.
That there is a platform for people of all spectrums of discourse to be recorded and put up online for them in decent quality and so on and so forth, then please go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. I got one person who's giving me $100 a month on automatic payment. Another person has given me 50. And my goal is to have 500 people, roughly, at $5 a month. That way I'll have expendable income, because there is a lot of equipment that needs to be bought in order to compete toe-to-toe. I'm already beating the mainstream media on YouTube, but I also want to have the ability to broadcast on television and be able to actually steal their audience right on primetime spots so I can destroy their media apparatus.
Yeah.
As I destroy it and steal their audience, their share prices will be going down while mine will be going up. And then it's hostile takeover time. And we'll end up having the truth movement, and I want to take this plan globally, being bigger than News Corp, and owning all the broadcasting and giving all those airwave times, all that airwave credit to the activists, the researchers, the doctors, so on and so forth, who are exposing all of these many eclectic agendas of the New World Order and inform the public as they should have been informed in the first place. And nobody will own it. Nobody will control the programming. Everybody contributes. Everybody fights. No one quits.
David Icke's also creating the People's Voice, so we're going to have some heavy-hitting main news and TV shows and radio shows coming out. We are just about out of time. I do want to let my listeners know that we are here at freedomslips.com. Speaking of donations, this is totally listener-supported radio. So if you have the means, please do make a donation at freedomslips.com to keep this platform open. And without corporate advertising here, we want to keep this a free, open platform. So please support us if you can. Support Vinny at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Support me at birthofanewearth.com. I want to apologize again for being late. My day got out of control. So I missed the first half hour with you, but Ahmad stepped in, and I want to thank him too. Any last thoughts, Vinny, before? I think we've got about 30 seconds.
30 seconds for some last thoughts, eh? Well, I look at it this way. History is kind of like just a moment. There's only one moment. It's this moment, isn't it? And that moment stretched all the way out through history and will stretch on all throughout eternity. So in a way, we get to share a moment with anybody who has ever lived or whoever will. And that's an encouraging thought.
And it's encouraging we get to share these moments with our listeners and with each other and bouncing ideas off of each other and truth-telling. Thank you to all my listeners. We'll be back next week at 8 o'clock, Channel V, here in
Listen to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.